Hi, I'm Adam Furnell, and welcome to the Useful Evaluation Podcast. I'm here with my partner in evaluation crime, Hino Rajani.
Hi, everybody.
As always, we're here to ask, how can evaluation change the world?
This week, we're going to hear from Michelle Baldwin, the Executive Director for Pillar Nonprofit Network in London, Ontario.
Michelle's one of those people that pretty much everyone in the nonprofit sector seems to know. She's always around in the community. She's speaking in the media, and she's meeting with people one-on-one to give them advice, to answer their questions. And she's just somebody that you really like knowing.
And Michelle's someone who's been a big champion of the nonprofit sector and beyond, the social impact. Anybody who's trying to make a difference, or any organization who's trying to make a difference in the world, Michelle is there.
And I think the interview really reflects that. We wander kind of all across the landscape of the nonprofit sector. And I found myself, as the conversation went on, kind of forgetting any questions that I thought I was going to ask going in, and just asking what came to the top of mind as we talked. And it was a real joy for me to have that time with Michelle. She's very busy. And so it was amazing to just be able to sit there and say, I've been wondering about this, and you've been thinking about this stuff for a long time. So what do you think?
I'm sure it was a joy for her as well to be able to do that with you.
Well, one hopes, and I suppose that's the goal of this here podcast, is to give people joyful opportunities to talk about evaluation. So one of the things that Michelle really talked about was the kind of evaluation and storytelling journey that the organization that she leads, Pillar Nonprofit Network, is going through. And I think that you'll see a really interesting perspective from her role as the executive director.
Yeah, because she's grappling with a lot of different things, right? To lead an organization, but then also to keep an eye on the bigger picture, as well as the day-to-day, and look at the impact, not just of her organization, but of the wider nonprofit sector in southwestern Ontario and in the whole of Ontario and beyond.
It's a huge question. How do we get to some of those, we'll say, system-level evaluation questions about the broader impact that a whole bunch of organizations are making on one particular thing? And I think it's a conversation that's kind of actually in its infancy, and so it'll be interesting to see how it evolves over time. One thing that you should know about this interview before we get into it is that Michelle refers to a project quite often throughout the interview. She's referring to the project that inspired this podcast. It's a partnership of organizations working together to discover what useful evaluation could look like for nonprofits and social enterprises across Ontario here in Canada. And so I just wanted to mention that to you in case you're listening and you go, what is that project? What is that project?
It's the Useful Evaluation Project, which inspired this podcast. Of which this podcast is actually a part, in fact.
It's very true. It's almost like we took some inspiration in our name.
Let's get on with it.
Yes.
Here's Adam in conversation with Michelle Baldwin.
Just before we get into the interview, you might notice my voice sounds a bit different just now. Here's what happened. When we first interviewed Michelle, we forgot to record a couple of questions, but we didn't want you to miss out, so we brought Michelle back. First, we'll find out who Michelle is, then you'll hear Adam come in with the original recording. So let's just dive right in there. And can you tell us who you are?
So my name is Michelle Baldwin. I'm a community connector, and I like to think of myself, or now I kind of understand myself, as a social entrepreneur, and sometimes even a productive disruptor is how I might describe myself. My formal role is executive director at Pillar Nonprofit Network, and I also volunteer a lot. So with the Ontario Nonprofit Network and all sorts of other things that really, you know, kind of give me joy. And for the purposes of all of this, I feel like now I know I'm an evaluator. So somebody who believes that if we can measure what matters and try to find useful ways to know if we're doing things in a way that make a difference in the community, we can make good decisions, we can make sure that we're making the kind of impact that we want to have.
Tell us about the journey with Pillar.
So Pillar Nonprofit Network was started by Willie Van Cluster, and he'd heard about this idea of a chamber of charities, similar to a chamber of commerce. And the idea would be that you would support the nonprofit sector, but then you would also look at the three pillars, nonprofit, business, and government, and see that nonprofit pillar is the middle pillar that looks after the quality of life of people and citizens. And so when I heard about this, I was like, oh, this is an organization that's going to help do the connecting that I already love to do, but it's going to open this whole world up to organizations and people. And so as Pillar started, we, like many organizations, had 15 objectives and all these big ideas. And over time, we really found our place to really focus on positive community impact. So the journey was, it's just come down to building relationships and trust with all three pillars, finding fabulous people to work with. And so at the heart of it, you know, we're trying to help nonprofits be the best they can be. And over time, realize that there's social enterprises, that there's this graying of the space between the three pillars, and how do we work at the edges of that and really try to recognize that it doesn't always have to be in a formal structure, that it can be citizens, it can be organizations, it can be business that can create impact.
We'll pick the interview up in progress with Michelle talking to Adam about why Pillar got involved with evaluation, and about what she's come to understand about what useful evaluation is.
Sure. Well, so early on, you know, there was this kind of dialogue happening. What is outcome evaluation? What is impact measurement? What's social return on investment? And quite honestly, there felt like there was a bit of a pressure from funders that we would, you know, be understanding that. And as a, you know, Pillar nonprofit network would be helping others to explore and better understand it. So the initial idea was probably a bit more pragmatic, that it was really like, how do we educate people about all these? And then they can choose what they want to do. Over time, it evolved into how do we learn from others? And in this case, you know, the partnerships with other shared spaces across Ontario, small, large, you know, became part of the process. And so we ended up thinking, how do we learn from others? And then how do we kind of go deep about Pillar's own process? And I don't think we ever used this language, but now more recently, I'm thinking, how do we model this and tell our own story? You know, fast forward, we use the language of useful evaluation, because you can do lots of evaluation, but it, making sure that it's useful and that it's driven by the organization. And I think funders would say, make sure it's driven by the organization, even when they're putting in, you know, let's use a grant, for example, you have to have a big evaluation process. But how do you make sure, like, you're really thoughtful about what you put in there, and that you're not putting things in there just so that you get funded? So for me, the project and the journey has been like really trying to get a whole team at Pillar to embrace and build evaluation into the culture. And it's been about connecting with others who might be exploring the same thing.
So that idea of building into the culture of an organization, a sort of understanding of evaluation as something that can help them in the day-to-day, can be useful to them. Does that relate to this idea of taking pauses?
Mm-hmm, definitely. I think the strategic planning journey that Pillar just went through, it was the most, in my time here, the most pausing we've probably done with different stakeholders or different groups that we work with. And even being part of those conversations is that time to pause. As part of this project, we've done an art of failure, art installation and exploring failure. Pillar's always had a bias towards speed, a bias towards, like, you know, doing a lot. And so this is really the whole kind of project kind of with our strategic planning has made us realize, how do we focus and go deeper? And so for me, evaluation is one of those, like, and I think we're using more the language now of impact measurement, but how do we kind of build that into the culture? And I didn't think of this, but I think it was you who mentioned, like, even just being the executive director and being involved, like, you kind of have to model what you're hoping from other people. And so I don't think I strategically did it. I think you did. You kept pulling me in, which was good, because I would agree, like, we've had good buy-in. And now it's, how do we keep that going as we're bringing new people into the team? And even in the community, the people change over in nonprofits, social enterprises, those who are trying to create impact. And so this isn't something you can do for 15 months and think, okay, great, boxed up and we're done. We're done project impact. We're done useful evaluation. It's like, how do you keep it alive and a continual dialogue?
Do you have a sense of the answer to that question?
Oh, well, I'm excited of coming together with all of the partners for that reflection. Again, like a moment to just pause and reflect. Well, one, I think our own organization needs to be continuing that and to be making it a priority. And the fact that it's in the strategic plan and it's named as, you know, Pillar's own work and the community will mean that it very much is something that we're trying to, keep alive. I hope that the relationships that we have with our partners will continue, you know, to have these conversations, because as shared space is focused on social innovation, that's a very different value proposition than, you know, other things happening in a community. And so how do we learn from each other in that moment? And maybe so in this bias of speed I was talking about, how do you create your team to know that they can stop and pause and think, or where are they building that in? And so I try to do that through some coaching that I do with a leadership coach that I've had for 10 years, and she's always encouraging me, and even just having meetings with her. How do you make sure that you just pause? But how does the rest of your team have that? Is the big question when they feel a lot of pressures to get a lot done.
You sit in the executive director role at Pillar, and that's a role that carries a lot of responsibility and a lot of weight in the nonprofit sector, maybe for better or for worse sometimes. What does it feel like to have a team of people in an organization that are maybe starting to feel like they want that opportunity to pause? Does it feel like for you as somebody that maybe knows that it's important but doesn't quite know how to give them the opportunity to do it?
Well, I think, like, if I look at, I've worked in different nonprofits, I would say the team at Pillar actually does it quite well. Like today, there was a group of the team members who went to a Transforming Capitalism, like, online learning opportunity with the Sisters of St. Joseph. To me, that's a pause opportunity to think about how does social finance fit into this bigger systems change that we're trying to create. I just don't know if we name it as such. And so I think there are opportunities, or people who go and do yoga on their lunch, or, you know, there are people who do it. It's just, how do you make sure that everybody has that same invitation and sees it as that? And, you know, the Transforming Capitalism is reflecting on your work. The yoga is, you know, your full mind, body, spirit, which is important as well, but you still need the pause about the work. So just how do you try to encourage that? I think it's talking about that. It's built into our team alliance. We have a team alliance that values self-care and, you know, those moments of reflection. And then also recognizing that everybody does things differently and they're going to need different things. So, you know, working to their capacity and the way that they show up in the world. So, for example, I don't know where I read it, but where it was like, everybody's going to do meditation at 12 o'clock, you know, every Wednesday. Well, there's going to be people that that's not where they're at. So I think there has to be opportunities to kind of build what it is that you need for reflection.
Do you ever feel like you have to justify that approach to anybody outside of your organization?
So far, no. Although if people follow us on social media, sometimes I think they probably think we have a lot of fun, or, you know, probably would be some judgment about that. But I think that's why we're trying to create a conversation about it, so that, you know, there's research that shows that teams that, you know, create the space for self-care, for reflection, for deeper, like, kind of going from that individual impact to collective impact, it does shift an organization. And when your whole team is thinking more at a systems level, or they're their full self, like, that is obviously going to have payoff for your organization.
You talked about working with a leadership coach as maybe one of the practices that you yourself use to keep yourself present and fully human in the work that you do. Are there any processes beyond that in your personal life that you kind of keep coming back to that maybe are evaluation related?
Mm-hmm. Well, so one of them that I've actually come to realize through this work is, like, being in nature is definitely a place of reflection and healing. And so I love hiking. I love being in the forest. I love being near water. I'll even go to the beach in the winter and walk along the water. So for me, it's a place of, like, of rejuvenation. And so that's been important. One of my favorite processes that I've done with the coach is, like, setting goals for, I believe we did 6 months, might have been 18 months, 5 years, 20 years. So I've always set goals, like, a few years out, 5 years out, but to do 20 years was actually quite fascinating. And so recently I pulled them back out and just reviewed them. And because it's always good to check in if you're achieving them. And it was pretty cool. Like, there was a lot that had been accomplished, but then it was like a bit of a reminder about, okay, there's still work to be done. So goal setting is something that, so I do it as for the board as well. I have ED goals. But then I think it's also like, what are your personal goals? Because in mine, there were things about, you know, moving to a walkable community, or, spending more time with my girls and developing a friendship. Like, I think it can be personal, but as well, you know, just what are those goals that show up in work? And so what's fun is when you see the kind of the connection point between those, that you see, okay, I see how my work integrates into my life.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I think for the first time probably in my life, I sat down and set goals this year. And I spoke with Carolyn Holdsworth on an earlier episode, and Carolyn said, you know, sometimes goal setting gets a bad rap. And I understood what she meant, because I'd sort of resisted goal setting for a very long period of time in my life, because I was sort of wanting to stay open to everything that could possibly happen. And I think maybe what I acknowledged this year was that I'll always have the opportunity to blow up the goals, to delete some, to change them, to alter them. And you may as well set them for a period of time.
Absolutely. Maybe it's the New Year resolutions that have got us thinking that they're a bad rap. But I do think there's something to be said about just, and like you said, you can change them, but it's the intentionality of, and I think even writing it down, or, you know, creating some sort of, I don't know, I've seen people who do what are those storyboards, or, you know, about what they're kind of visioning, like having a vision for where you're trying to go doesn't mean that you're going to know exactly what every step is to get there, but just how are you working towards that?
And we had this sort of experience when we were working on the strat plan for Pillar, thinking about what the heck is a goal actually. And you get into these conversations about language and how do you label certain things. And I guess I'm wondering for you, what is a goal?
Oh, well, I think this project, you know, one of the, if I was naming something that I felt a bit funky about, it would probably be language is the thing I'm still trying to figure out. And so what's interesting is I feel like I could better articulate it when I picture myself in creating a goal as opposed to an organization. But so using myself, it's like it's an aspiration of something I want to achieve and something I want to work towards that is like kind of audacious, maybe not always, but you know, it's something that's going to take a bit to get there. I like kind of that kind of goal setting that like kind of gets you outside of your comfort zone.
And it makes me wonder this sort of like confusion, maybe not confusion, but the complexity around language when we talk about evaluation terminology. It sort of makes me wonder if it's actually all that important to arrive at a standard definition for certain words, or if maybe it's just important to come to an understanding in your own particular world about what it means.
Yes, I think that's so true. And obviously easier to do for yourself, but when you're working within a team, you know, continually having a dialogue about what does this mean to us, and seeing that evaluation, strategic planning, like your life is fluid and that it's not going to stay the same as when, you know, you start. And so I've become a big fan of developmental evaluation, which I didn't really fully understand and I still probably have some learning to do, but just that you're doing it right from like even when you're conceiving an idea or project, that you're building that in all the way along, and it's like helping you to adapt and, you know, shift and change throughout a project or a initiative. Or so now we're trying to build that into our organization more, rather than thinking, oh, at the end, okay, how are we going to figure out how we did on this project? Let's send out a survey and see what XYZ thought about this. It's like, how are you using what you're learning along the way to tweak and make things better?
Start at the beginning is a great idea. And probably something else I've heard from some people is that it's never too late to start.
True. Yeah, even if you haven't put that in. And the reality is this takes resources. And so that's something I've been thinking about, like time, staff time or personal time. It takes money, like, you know, to sometimes if you want to hire somebody, if it's a large scale project. So we've been working with different academic partners through like lots of work. And it's amazing how in research and academia, like putting huge money into process of research and evaluation makes total sense. But then when you get into the nonprofit sector, it's like people don't realize the value. and nonprofits that I'm seeing who are putting that in right from the beginning, there's huge payoffs when you can measure your impact, tell your story, because when you go out, you know, from just a practical side of trying to get money, people can understand the value of what you're doing. And so when you build that in, it's pretty magical.
Do you think there's ways of doing this kind of intentional learning or evaluation without that financial resource supporting you?
Yeah, I think it's there's nowhere we're going to find like the kind of money that it would take to have all the evaluators support all the nonprofits. So one thought would be, how do we build the relationships with our academic institutions and leverage the assets that they have and kind of broker relationships with nonprofits? So we have one project, Diverse City on Board, where we worked with a PhD student who did a full scale project, and it was like, it was amazing. And so how do we do more of that? And how do we help the nonprofit sector know that's available? So that's still, though, pretty grandiose. So then how do you build it into your team culture that they're doing it, like reflecting on it, noticing that it's happening and doing it, and that there's an expectation every time, like every program, every initiative, that somehow you're trying to measure the impact, whatever that looks like. And so I think there's a way to do it. It just, like, it can be messy. Can be hard. You know, I feel like this project, when we create this map, it's amazing all the things that have happened. I think we still have work to do at Pillar of how do we weave it all together and see it as something, or maybe you don't, but it's the wholeness that I think for me, I'm still trying to get my head around with evaluation.
Yeah. Weaving it all together, wholeness. I think it just gave me a moment of pause to think about that. It's interesting. Let's maybe shift gears just a little bit. And let's talk about failure for a minute or two. That's been part of the conversation that we've been having this year at Pillar. And I think just today we've installed a new piece of art in the stairwell at Innovation Works. And it's been part of our journey to talk about failure to generate that piece of art. And I guess I'm curious to know what you've come to understand about failure as we've worked through this as an organization.
Well, if I rewind to when I actually started to think about failure, it was the work for around social enterprise and social innovation, where you could just see that there was, you know, a conversation about how business, it's just expected that you're going to do R&D and that you're going to try new things and that you're going to fail. And yet in the nonprofit sector, because you have donated dollars, government dollars, or whatever that looks like, there just isn't the same culture. And I think it was Fail Forward, maybe, who I first heard that from. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so true. So I came back and we started to have these failure moments at our team meetings. And the team kind of looked at me like, you want me to say in front of you how I failed in the last 2 weeks? And at the start, it was like, oh, I was late with this. And, you know, the depth wasn't there. But over time, you can just see how it's shifted. So now I feel like we've just like blown up failure, if you will, at Pillar to go even deeper, that it's like more than just how have you failed in the last 2 weeks, but thinking about, you know, as a culture, what are our biases? How does this show up as people, as systems? Like we've done a deeper dive about that and sat in the discomfort of failure. And we still, you know, I wouldn't say we're totally comfortable with it, but there's an openness to it. And so even like we talk about failure and then people are like, well, you can't just say failure. You have to say failure and learning. Or, you know, can you just talk about impact and learning? And so it's interesting how it can just make you kind of feel like, oh, I don't know about this. And yet we fail all the time. And so I always imagine if we could put failure into like the curriculum right from when you start school, as opposed to like kind of what I think is a system of getting it right all the time, how could that change the world? Just that simple talking about failure and the fact that we're going to do it. And we might even do it every day in little ways or big ways. So I've found the experience transformational for the team. And the art installation is like such a cool representation of how, you know, I mean, I know you can't see it, but let me just try to describe to you. Like it has the weaving together, and that there's the shapes, the spirals, the circles, there's something that has a commonality to it, but yet it has different colors, different, like it's not perfect. It's an art piece that has a bit of rawness to it. So I just think it's just a perfect reflection of what failure is that how do you find the rawness and how do you find the beauty in it?
Can you fail if you don't set goals?
That's a good question. I feel like it might be a trick question, but I think you can fail without setting goals because you can just pause to say, do I feel like that was what I was hoping for or what we were hoping for? And, you know, what might I do differently? So that could be as simple as being in a meeting and thinking, oh, how did I show up in there? And is that the way the conversation that I hoped that I would have? Or even celebrating sometimes when you've done it right, but then recognizing when you don't. Or it can be something really big where you've, you know, tried something. So I see this in the nonprofit sector. We don't prototype a lot. We plan, and something takes 5 years. And then when it doesn't work, it's like, whoa, is that a failure? So I think there's micro failure and then there's like, woo, big failures. And I'm not sure you always have goals that are part of that process.
Have you learned anything over the years of doing the work that you've done about how to sort of, I'm not quite sure how to ask this, but how to notice in the moment when you might be on the way to failing?
To sense that
it's about to happen.
Yeah. Well, I think in the art of failure, we talk about like, how does failure make you feel? There's something about being in tune with your brain and your body about like how something is landing with you. And sometimes we ignore those signs. So I think it's like paying attention to that. Sometimes being sitting in that discomfort is okay, but also following when it's not feeling right. And naming it or, you know, exploring why is that? So I know I've been in those situations where I kind of think, okay, this isn't feeling right, but what do I do with it? And like, can you stop the train or whatever you're like, how fast can you kind of shift gears? So I definitely am somebody who has conversations with people about that. I don't usually just kind of go, okay, we're done. It's like trying to check in with my own assumptions and figuring out, is this a discomfort because it's pretty wild, or is it a discomfort because you're actually not on the right track, and trying to figure that out.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask about, was the sort of difference or the way that you can try and figure out the difference between discomfort because something's just really hard or really new or really uncomfortable, but it has to happen, and the discomfort that you feel when you're just really not showing up the way that you want to show up in the world. And I know that's something that I struggle with in my work sometimes, is knowing the difference, especially when you're maybe trying to shift something in people's activities or their world that maybe they've accepted for a long period of time.
Yeah, my another like kind of thing that happened probably during this journey was the recognition that people, like when you're trying to create a big change, you're not going to get everybody to come with you at the beginning. And like, how do you have forgiveness for yourself in that moment? How do you have forgiveness for people that they're going to come along when they want to? And I think when you're trying to create big systems change, you can think, well, you weren't there at the beginning, or you didn't believe this at the beginning. So what if we were open to people kind of getting on the bus whenever it made sense for them? What would that look like? And if you're trying to create a movement or like a huge change, it's like being, I think it's that invitation to come along whenever it makes sense to you. So I sometimes have to check myself on that too. And, you know, using innovation works as an example, there were people right there at the beginning, those like big, you know, kind of big thinkers who are like, oh yeah, I totally see where you're going. And others who just were like, I don't know about this. That sounds like I'm not totally there with you. But some of them come and they tour and they're like, I thought this was going to fail, if I'm being upfront. And I'm like, and that's okay. And now here you are. And you know, how do we bring you in? So anyways, that's just, you know, failure can show up of thinking that you didn't get somebody engaged right from the beginning of something. And I find when you can shift somebody who was a bit of a not on board at the beginning later on, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So what is that, what it looks like? Does it look like growing movements if we allow people to get on the bus when they feel like it? Is that what the world looks like?
Good question. Well, yeah, movement building, I think it's about people and it's meeting them where they're at. To create a movement, it does have to kind of get some energy behind it and some momentum. like having people that are trusted influencers, which whatever that looks like, I think does help to create, like, kind of get it going. And then how do you make sure, though, that you're not excluding people on that movement building, I think is another important piece. So you don't want to create a club around your movement. You want to make sure that it's something that everybody feels that invitation to be part of.
How do you balance that desire to be collaborative and the realities of working in the nonprofit sector, where sometimes you just know that you don't have the resources to reach out as much as you would like to?
Well, collaboration is, like, it's intense and it takes a lot of relationship building, and there's a huge investment that goes into it. So I think being strategic about your collaborations would be important, like thinking why. We have a new decision-making tool that isn't maybe specific to collaborations, but it's definitely a process to think about, like, you know, the reasons that we might make a decision to do something. And one of the questions is, are we the best to do this, or are there others we can collaborate with? So I think just having processes that create that strategic moment to pause is important. The more I'm in the sector, the more I realize collaboration is really, really really hard and necessary. And so I think we need to continue to invest the time in creating that shared vision and communication. But it's hard. And then when you, like, I know, using collective impact as an example, one of the pieces is shared measurement. Well, that is, like, in a collaboration, finding something that you collectively want to measure. That, like, I find the shared vision, no problem. Shared communication, definitely has some failure in it, but you can do that. The shared measurement is where I've, you know, seen a lot of challenge and could learn more.
I want to ask two questions because it probably speaks to the two different scopes or the two different levels of things that you might want to have a shared measurement strategy for. And the first one is, I want to ask about, what would we recommend to funders or to other nonprofits who are trying to do collaborative work about the things that we should measure to tell us if our collaborations are growing? That's the one thing that I'm curious about. And on the other side, I think I want to know about, how do you measure the growth of a collaborative?
Well, I think it means every time that you get together, you're asking questions about, how is this working? How is it going? Like, you can't just send out, again, a survey and say, tell us what you think. Like, it takes continuous reflection as a team, setting up the principles for collaboration at the beginning, I think are really important, and checking in what's working and not working. We used the collective impact framework with Verge Capital and our partners to think about, like, all the different areas around how are we doing in each. And so we people filled it out on their own so that they didn't have to feel like, you know, they're talking in front of everybody. But then we discussed it as a group, and it was really a helpful process. So I guess that's an example of where we've used reflection. I think measuring connections and collaboration is not easy, because how do you know the attribution of your contribution to that collaboration happening? So, you know, a group that's come together and they partner on something, like, was it the introduction within your collaborative, you know, moment that was the reason, or did they hear it from other people? Like, it's just sometimes it's really difficult to map out. So going back to my question about, like, how do you weave things together and tell a story? I think it takes, it's a continuous, journey of lots of different points that is a network together to kind of reflect on a collaboration. It's not a point in time.
Yeah, so I'm hearing that we have to not only agree on how do we measure the thing that we're trying to do in the world, we also have to agree on how do we measure whether we're working together in a good way.
Yes, that's so true. And creating the time to do that is not easy.
The other thing I want to pick up on is attribution. I think we all feel that pull sometimes in projects to attribute the change in the community or the change in the world to the work that we're doing, because we've received some funding to do that work and we want to make sure that we're accountable to that funding. I'm wondering if there's a dark side to pursuing attribution.
What I've seen happen a little bit is that, you know, in an ecosystem, everybody's taking attribution. And so if you're trying to really look at the community and how it's serving, let's say an entrepreneur or a nonprofit, or like, it's sometimes the overlapping of attribution kind of makes the story sound even bigger than what it really is, and maybe can take away from the individual, like entrepreneur or the people, like kind of what they've brought to it, if you will. Like, if we layer on organization attribution, like how do we make sure that that person's perseverance or whatever the traits are that help them get to where they need to be, how do you hold on to that and not take that away from them when you're taking the attribution? So in this case of evaluation in this project, you know, how do we with, you know, Ten Cardin have, like, they've done a personal journey on evaluation that they need to be able to really embrace and celebrate as the contribution they've made. And, you know, so is it about providing the platform or the conditions for evaluation or for so that attribution is kind of seen as part of something bigger? Maybe that's how we can better balance that. I haven't thought about this. It's a good question. I love it.
it feels to me, I haven't thought about it either. It feels to me like there's something about trust that comes up too, community trust, when you're talking about questions of causality or attribution or who's responsible for what. And I can think of moments in my work, particularly the work I do with young people, where I sit with groups of young people in rooms and we hear about the great things that have been done for them by others. And they go out into the parking lot afterwards and they say, I don't know if I would attribute that success to those people.
Yes.
And it just makes me think of that and how quickly you can lose the trust of a group if you wrongly attribute something to yourself.
So maybe it's about, you know, a check-in or, like, you know, asking about the attribution. If you're going to tell that story, is this how you see it? I know for failure in a particular, like, perception, you can look at it, you know, something, and everybody, I guess, so let's say you're evaluating failure, and that we did this for Innovation Works, trying to look at some of the past iterations that, you know, just didn't kind of move along. And it was interesting because if you asked four people, we all had a different perception about why the project didn't move along. And so that is just a reminder that, you know, it's not that, yeah, we all show up to something and we'll see it from a different perspective. It doesn't mean anybody is more right or wrong, but what an opportunity for dialogue if you actually catch that you all have a different perception on that.
Yeah, and try to find a way to hold the multiplicity of those stories, mm-hmm. if you're, and maybe even think about if you can share those stories and when you can share those stories of failure.
And I think I've seen in this project, like, different points where we've had to think about whether or not we all have the same perception of what we're trying to achieve together, and like different, like, yeah, pauses to recalibrate. So I think it takes some flexibility to kind of roll with the change that's needed in that. And fortunately for us in this project, we had some flexibility because of who the partners were, because they generally show up with a lens of innovation. The funder in this case, because they were measuring impact, and just, you know, there was a bit more flexibility than others. And then I think because you're leading it from a facilitation point of just staying open to what the partners need and always trying to be grounded in that, I think that's, you know, part of the reason that we were able to flow, if you will.
Well, I hope that's the case.
Again, this is my perception.
Absolutely. Okay, so I want to ask you about a few words before I let you go. So the first word I want to know about is the word impact. At this moment in your journey, what does impact mean?
Oh, okay, well, I know you're asking me about in this moment, but if I can rewind, I remembered looking at a theory of change. That's an evaluation term that I didn't know what the heck it meant when I first heard it. And this was years ago when we were starting our consulting practice, and somebody that worked with us really asked about, like, why does your mission say to strengthen the effectiveness of the nonprofit sector? And I think this was Dan Pilato was out again, just talking a little bit about the sector and how it's perceived. And I kind of had this aha that we talk about efficiencies, effectiveness, but that doesn't always mean that a nonprofit or, you know, anything that your social change project is having impact. So it really got me back to, like, what is the long term of what we're trying to create? And nonprofits, for example, it's not you know, having an organization because of the service or the, or to employ staff or, you know, to just be in community. It's about serving people, the environment, animals, or whatever, towards an impact, and I would hope a positive community impact. So for me, impact is like when you're creating a change that is having, and I would say I would like to see it have a positive impact that is in service to humans, like, or I guess maybe let's say people or planet.
What do you think our responsibility is to capture our negative impact?
Well, I think it kind of connects back to the failure. And I think it's like, what is the journey to get to the impact, and knowing that you're not going to get it all right. And maybe a bit more transparency about that. So, you know, without getting into big examples, but there's big things happening in our world around social media, and like where it's, there's negative consequences to choices that we make, and how do we take responsibility from those? How do we learn from those, and how do we move forward? I think that's where my head is with impact, but I get pretty jazzed about the word impact.
Reminds me, I heard a quote, and I'm going to paraphrase it horribly, and I have no idea who to attribute it to, but they said something along the lines of, the second you make something a metric, it ends up being, I think the word was perverted, like it ends up being used for both good and evil.
Well,
and
right, yes.
I think about it with words too. The sort mm-hmm. of second you land on a term, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's evil.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, because we can have good and bad impact in the world. There's no doubt.
Okay, and another word, okay. Word number two, evaluation.
Evaluation. Oh, yes. Okay. So what does evaluation mean to me now? Evaluation would be a way of making sense of something and using that information for evidence, decision making, and for good.
I like it. I especially like the use part.
Yes. Well, we explored that a lot. And the reason when I first heard it, I was like, useful use. And then I realized there's so much that you can be doing around evaluation, and like, how do you make sure that it's in service to you, to your organization, to whatever you're doing? I think that is, it's really an important part of the definition.
I don't think I need to ask you about other words, but I do want to ask you one more thing before I let you go. and that's to imagine a future where all organizations are doing more useful evaluation. How's the world changing?
Well, because organizations are in service to our community, we would be having more impact and creating the change that we're wanting to create. So I think evaluation that is rooted in, informed decisions and evidence making means that we're going to have better results. So I see like a world that is, it's a better world, and it's a world that's, I haven't used this word, but I love the notion of storytelling, and it's a world that's sharing stories, sharing, you know, being vulnerable, celebrating. That's what I would see.
This was fun.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
What a blast.
For the time. It was great. And there it is, another episode of the Useful Evaluation Podcast. If you want to continue the conversation, head over to our website, usefulevaluation.ca. Thanks to Lisa Pruden for editing this episode, to Hino Rajani for co-hosting, to the team at Pillar Nonprofit Network in London, Ontario for your support, and to the Ontario Ministry of Citizenship and Immigration for helping to make this work happen. Here's to another week of thinking about evaluation.